Nicole McKee joins us for a regular conversation. Often we talk about firearms issues, and probably will today too, because gang violence and gun control remain an important kaupapa. But we might start with the three strikes. Now, we spoke of this yesterday with Kiri Tapu Allen. Labor's turned its backs on victims of serious crime, says Nicole, as it prepares to scrap the three strikes. And ACT will bring it back for the worst criminals, she says. Thank you for joining us at the Tuhine. A warm welcome once again, Nicole.
Morena, thank you for having me.
Thanks very much.
Oh, sorry, three strikes.
Yeah, we're going to start there, please, Nicole, only because it's a hot topic. I spoke with Kiri Tapu Allen about it yesterday. They're saying that too many are incarcerated for too long, and that discretion is unavailable with the current legislation by those who have the judicial responsibility. You've already come out and said that you don't agree with this, and for the worst criminals, we need to have the three strikes legislation. Share with our listeners your viewpoints, please, Nicole.
Yeah, look, I think it's absolutely essential that we make sure that those criminals that are recidivists, that are seriously violent, have consequences to the actions. And so in 2009, ACT, with the then National Party, introduced the three strikes legislation. And effectively, it's not three strikes on everything, right? It's three strikes for the most serious offences that occur, the most serious violent offences. And there's 40 of them that have been listed. And what we've seen is a very small proportion of people that have dropped between strikes. So we think that there is a very small deterrent effect that has occurred. But the thing is, we've only had this operating since 2009. And if we were to really look at the data, we have to go through a period of what would be full sentences to really fully appreciate what the impact is going to have. And in order to do that, people need to serve full time, and that's more than a decade, right? Because we've got full sentences on a second strike and then full sentences on a third strike, which could be up to 14 years for some people, before we see when they get out if they're going to be recidivists again. So when we're looking at putting away the worst of our criminals, we're not talking hundreds of people here. Those that are serving a third strike at the moment number 24 in total, and they average between them 74 convictions each. So it's not the slap on the hand. It's actually the really serious violent criminals that the government are saying we need to let them out because this is unfair. And ACT's response to that was actually we need to lock them up, give them rehabilitation, make sure that they're better pillars of our community when they come out, and give them the tools to be that way. But while they're out in society, they're just going to keep on wreaking havoc with no rehabilitation out there for them. So we are against the three strikes legislation being repealed, and we will put it back in place again as a priority if we get back into government, or I should say when we get into government come 2023, and work with National, because a big part of this as well, Dale, is looking after the victims of this really serious crimes that have been committed. And nowhere throughout this piece of repeal legislation have the victims been consulted in any way. Even the Human Rights Commission did not place the word victim within their report to the Select Committee, not once. So I think there's been a huge piece of legislation that misses out a big part of our community, and that's the victims and their voices. So this is why we are against the repeal, Dale.
Māori are sadly tied up too much in this. Look, we can go into intergenerational trauma, loss of land, culture, identity, etc., and you've heard a lot of that rhetoric. But do your political viewpoints and your tono to get more justice for victims override your support for our people and the terrible circumstances some have grown up in, and part of the backdrop or reason for their constant offending? You might be seen as being anti-Māori by this stance. Can you share some kōrero about that, please?
Yeah, look, I think what you've brought up is something that also needs to be addressed, but not in the same context of the way that the violence is being carried out on the victims. And when you say, you know, we have a lot of Māori that are imprisoned, a lot of their victims are also Māori. And when we take on the stance of looking after the victims, we are also looking at looking after Māori, because it's our people in the homes, regardless of what race you are, that are the ones that end up being hurt, and quite constantly, by the recidivist type of crime. So we have a couple of things that need to be addressed there. How do we work through, and this is where rehabilitation comes in, the issues of the past that those that are committing these crimes are experiencing, but how do we also ensure that there is consequence for the bad deeds that are done, so that our victims are not left being or having to suffer. So it's, we can say that it's Māori going into prison, but we also need to say that we have to look after the victims, of which many are also Māori.
Thanks very much. I spoke yesterday with the writer of the report into digital accessibility, and noting that many of our older people, some rural-based, just aren't as digitally savvy as government departments assume. So what do you make of this situation, and do you think that digital exclusivity is a real issue for some members of our communities?
I think it is a real issue, and the Citizens Advice Bureau brought a petition to Parliament. We had a debate on it this week, where all the parties got to stand up and give 5 minutes on that digital exclusivity for our communities. And what we're finding is that more and more of our government departments are going online without giving people the tools of knowing how to access accurately that online service. And it's becoming a real issue, especially for our older and disabled generations within New Zealand. I've got my husband, 68 years old now, and he struggles with text messaging. Quite often he goes onto the computer and he says, I don't know how to fill this form out. And a lot of it too is about affordability, Dale, because you have people have to fill in forms and then they've got to send it in. Well, that means printing it, scanning it for many, and then having to try and have an email to send it back. And people are really, really struggling. So we had this debate where we said we are going to improve with age as a nation and with technology as a nation, but we need to take everybody with us and not just dump it on them. So we believe there's a responsibility for government agencies to make sure that if you're going to use the digital framework, the paper-based system is still there, is still accessible, and that we have front-counter people who can help with the paper-based system. I heard of somebody who said that they tried to fill in a passport application, didn't know how to send it online, so turned up at the government department to hand it in, and there was a note on the door saying there's nobody there. And so they had to go to the top floor of that particular building at New Zealand Post and pay $12 to courier it down to the bottom floor. I mean, this is just ridiculous. We can move with technology, but in this digital age, we need to teach people and take people along with us so that they too can have access and not be excluded.
I think you're talking about me, actually. I don't know. Oh, crikey. Thanks very much. Good catching up with you again, Nicole. All the best until next time.
You too.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thank you.